Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, we are rapidly approaching Live in Louisville 2, together for the rant. And I got an exciting piece of news today, boys. My publisher, my latest publisher, Harvest House, is going to get involved. They are going to be in the room that night with a case of my new graphic novel for like young readers. It's called Flex, The Extraordinary Life of a Mediocre Jock. And, we'll have a couple of those to give away. We'll have a case full of those to sell. And, Pipe, we're going to have a case full of Nerf footballs, are we not?
We are. We confirmed this. We had, a group of listeners who pooled their resources to sponsor that. So they will get shout outs by name, at least if they want it at the live event. But yes, we will have many Nerf footballs branded Happy Rant ready to throw into and at the crowd.
I love it. You know what? Deals are being made all over the place, Piper. And I appreciate your blurb on my graphic novel, by the way, and still waiting for big R's.
Well, when I read something about a mediocre jock, I'm immediately drawn to it because it's a pretty apt description for my athletic career.
Yeah, you and me both, baby. But, you know, Big R, I know this guy. He's got other things on his mind right now. And he may not have time.
Sabbaticaling and talking about one's feelings take up all the time.
That's a lot. You're looking at a lot of hours there, Pipe. So I don't expect anything. Big R, you take your time with it. Okay. I mean, it is a graphic novel, so it'd take like 20 minutes to read. But, you know, still.
Thanks, baby.
I want you to take all the time you need. And, boys, I want to talk about Lagares Roasters Coffee. Obviously, people know where to go to get that. But, Pipe, we have a Patreon page, and we have room left for just a couple more patrons. Is that correct?
We always have room for more patrons. We're actually about halfway to the financial goal we set. And the number that we put on there, we're trying to raise about $300 a month in donations, more or less, essentially you listeners helping us. And that covers our production costs, that covers hosting costs, that covers and then it also helps us put on things like the live event, because there are costs that go into that, and we do not want to pass on all of those costs to you in ticket sales and be like, hey, pay us $30 to come listen to us talk. So I mean, Ronnie wants us to charge $30 a ticket because Ronnie is the consummate businessman. I, however, am not a consummate businessman. I am a guilt-laden evangelical who thinks money is the devil. So, which also means I'm perfectly comfortable asking other people to give it to me, though. So that's what this is.
Yeah, there's an odd kind of contradiction right there. I think we're worth it, Pipe. How about I can just say it
right
like that?
I mean, and the thing is, you're probably right, and I'm probably right in some ways, and this is all a conundrum. But the short version of all of this is, if you go to happyrantpodcast.com, you can see a link to support us on Patreon. You can go for as little as a dollar a month, and we've had some people do that, all the way up to, I mean, you could pay for the rest of it if you were so generous. There's also some free stuff included, if depending on what level you support us at. So some free Lagares Roasters coffee, some free books, some free perks here and there as, you know, as we do different events and things like that. So you can find all that at Happy Rant Podcast. We would really appreciate your support, and it just takes a bit of a burden off of us in making this podcast happen. And it also, for example, gives Ted and I the opportunity to do a sports podcast on the side, which Ronnie will now grump about, even though Ronnie doesn't want to be involved in it.
No, I'm good with it, baby. I'm good. Why do you say that? I'm totally good. Do your sports thing. Great.
We will. Good. We will do our sports thing.
Good. I mean, you know, I'll come up with a little side gig, right? I mean, maybe I can come up with a side gig.
I see.
You know, maybe I can come up with some like sporty thing.
Do you want listener suggestions on what Ronnie's side gig should be?
I mean, obviously the answer to that would be absolutely not.
I think that would be fantastic.
I think we might need some listener suggestions on what Ronnie's side gig should be.
I feel like I already know what I want to talk about, and I'm not really concerned with what other people think that they want me to talk about. So
I'm competing sports podcast with Trogues in the future.
Hosted by The Rant? I mean, that sounds really compelling, Big T. I mean,
business is getting really convoluted right now.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I know. This is off the air feeling we need to be doing, you know.
Much like my feelings. And Pipe, you mentioned talking about feelings earlier. And I dare say there are few things that white affluent evangelicals love as much as the Enneagram. The Enneagram is right up there with like disc golf, Settlers of Catan, and like gluten intolerance for white people.
And Justin Timberlake.
That's right. That's right. Recently, my colleague, my former partner in book writing, KDY, one Kevin DeYoung, sent shockwaves through the white evangelical community by posting a blistering article on Gospel Coalition about the Enneagram, and people just went bananas. Like, I had people coming out of the woodwork. People know that I've written with KDY, you know, and usually they come out of the woodwork to say very fawning things about him, like, do you know KDY? Do you still speak with him? You know, that sort of thing. But
did you touch the hem of his robe?
Yeah, yeah. Have you touched the hem of his robe? Exactly. But now they came out to let me know how disappointed they were in KDY. You guys read this piece. Big R, you are an advocate. You're a passionate supporter of the Enneagram. I want you to walk us through, in light of your Enneagram profile, walk us through like how specifically this piece wounded you in light of like what number you are on the Enneagram. Okay?
Baby, that's really making a strong case for my love of all things Enneagram. I mean, so I'm with a network. I'm with Sojourn Network, and they are literally like batty, like over the Enneagram. Like the Enneagram, yes, is just like 1.6 centimeters below like God's word as being like divine and should be always trusted and listened, yeah, to authoritative. Yeah. So I don't know that I'm quite there, but you know.
Was KDY's article essentially just like an 8,000 word subtweet of Sojourn?
I think, I mean, I think KDY's article was just that, you know, like anytime something kind of verges into the philosophical or the psychological, you know, there are certain people in our tribe that can tend to, I think, lean into a little bit of their John MacArthur-ness and just want to completely take it as a tool and just kind of throw it out the window and say it's of no good use to anybody. And because I think some people take it way too far. And I think he was kind of pushing against – he probably has only heard the extreme end of people that say, hey, you know, we need to look into the crystal ball of the Enneagram before we do anything else. Before we consult God, we should probably look at the Enneagram first. He's probably critical of like that kind of movement with it. And yeah. So, of course, like all the Enneagram dudes that I know just immediately – you know, first they had to qualify themselves – for, you know, 20 minutes saying, I love KDY, I love everything he's written, I love him, I, you know, he'd be my best friend if I knew him. And, yeah. But man, what you said here about the Enny is totally off base, KDY. And so it was some good entertainment, right?
It was. And that's the point, right? I mean, Gospel Coalition, as we've talked about ad nauseum, like they are definitely in the like theological conversation business, but occasionally they veer into the like clickbait business. You know, there was another instance of this a couple of weeks ago, which I'd like to get into today on the show if we have time. You guys know what I'm referring to, but I think this one kind of falls into that category too. This was like rubbernecking, everybody's going to click on it, sort of clickbait. Pipe, what's your take on this? And then Big R, I've got a couple follow up questions for you, but I'm going to hang on to them. I want to hear Piper's reaction to this.
Well, I'm gonna return serve on this one back to you, Ted, because when we were texting about this, the three of us, you know, Ronnie gave an opinion similar to what he just said, you know, sort of that, oh, look, your John MacArthur is showing. And you responded, Ted, to say you kind of agree with KDY and his various points about the Enneagram. And so I'm interested in hearing why you agree, because I would also like to stir our listeners into a lather, because I know there's some of them out there chanting like 7-8 wing, 7-8 wing, because that's just how they define themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I agree. I agree. I think in spirit with what KDY wrote. I wasn't, you know, I'll admit I didn't get through all the words. So there were a lot of words. Yeah, there were a lot of words, and I got the gist of the words. However, I think KDY kind of managed to miss the – for me, the biggest critique of the Enneagram is that it takes a people group that's probably teetering right on the edge of ragingly narcissistic anyway and just gives them like kind of full license to do more raging narcissism and self-examination all the live
more
long
nursing.
Day. And more narcing, and you can couch the narcing in spirituality, right? So it's the best thing. You can think about yourself endlessly and call it like being a good Christian and everyone wins. So, you know, look, I'm not like hard body karate against the Enneagram. I've taken it. I think it was insightful. I thought it was interesting. I read the little thing about myself and, you know,
and
I put
and
it
you
somewhere.
Got shivers all over because it's amazing when you read something about yourself and it's accurate. You're like, oh, wow, look at that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, seriously. It was really insightful and it was accurate. And, you know, I put it somewhere between like, you know, reading the placemat at a Chinese restaurant about your whatever. And, you know, Myers-Briggs, I like Myers-Briggs too, but I don't know. Look, to me, it's a tool. It can be an exercise in narcissism for a lot of people, but you know, I mainly wanted to take Katie Y's side, just to see like if I could stir the pot a little bit on here. But
see if you could do it. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I actually agree with both of you guys on this in different points, respectively. I agree with Ronnie that it came across very much as do most of these sort of, hey, here's a caution about a cultural trend. It does come across as very fundy, you know, it's just sort of like, it's predictable. You could probably, sure. I probably could have outlined the points for him before he wrote it. You know, in fact, I had those thoughts when I familiarized myself with the Enneagram, read a couple books and took one or two of the evaluations, also found it helpful. But to your point, Ted, I do think that it is fuel for the narcissistic fire, but so is everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we as people have managed to take like the gospel and turn it to our ends. Like,
yeah, created a brand around it. Yeah, you're right.
We make money off of it. We've created a brand around it. There's prosperity gospel, which is false gospel. Sure. But like we take everything good and turn it into a how can I earn and benefit and feel better from this. So the difficulty in that is that it's hard to read that article and go, well, what is good about it? Like there's no balance there. It's just sort of like the seesaw just keeps going where one side is like, it's terrible. And the other side is like, it's my life. And there's no balance in it.
So Pipe, I think Katie Y's biggest issue with the Ennie is not so much with the Ennie, but with this book that he kind of took to the woodshed on the article. And I think the guy who wrote the book tends to lean left and tends to lean toward kind of touchy-feely emergent village circa 2004 type stuff anyway. And I don't know, maybe KDY was more responding to that than the Innie itself.
I mean, has KDY ever been known to have an issue with 2004 emergent village stuff? Like, is that a thing?
Dude, I didn't know it was a thing anymore because I thought that in 2006 or 2007, KDY and I like killed that whole thing. So I don't know.
But Ted, I think you're right, though. I think that, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Big M and she said, actually, she goes, I really think that KDY is just tweaked by the book more than he's tweaked by the concept of Enneagram in general. Yeah. And again, the book, you have to read the book in light of who's writing it and the people they're quoting. I mean, you have to take some of that with a grain, right? But it felt to me like he was pushing hard against the book.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And Big R, so you mentioned your network is all in on the Ennie. And you mentioned that there were, quote, Enneagram guys. Like, can you, and I know you can't make fun of people in your network. So what I would like you to do is just very dispassionately describe these guys and then let Pipe and I make fun of them.
I think I can make fun of them. I mean, I mean, would we be who we are if I can't make fun of my own guys?
No, that's right. Amen, baby. Amen. Yeah. So what do these guys look like? And what does the Enneagram discussion look like in these meetings? I want you to put us in that room for a minute.
Well, this is what happens, right? So you're in one of these meetings and you're talking and somebody starts getting there's a particular kind of passion that comes out of all of us for certain types of things, right? Like when we're talking about anything, some of us become like more animated in this direction or that direction. And then what it kind of becomes, which is really interesting to me, man, is it becomes almost like a disarming tool. So when somebody starts going off on something that really probably due to who they are in the Enneagram is important to them and they become passionate about it, what somebody can do in the discussion, if they're uncomfortable with that, is they can turn around and go, hey, by the way, before you continue, what are you on the Enneagram?
Yeah.
And then it almost completely disarms the whole discussion. And then it basically, it basically, in a sense, it gave license to the guy asking the question to say, hey, you're only thinking that, you're only saying that because that's where you're at on the Enneagram. So I just want the whole table to know that, so that we know that, like, you're showing a level of imbalance here that I'm not really that cool with.
Yes, right? Yes.
And so that's kind of how it fleshes out, while everybody else just, you know, manically sips their coffees, kind of waiting for the awkwardness to, like, you know, dissipate in the room. But so it's like, it's all, so any can be used as a weapon, right? To say, like, okay, I need to know who you are, or to know what kind of validity I want to give what kind of crazy stuff you're saying right now.
Absolutely, because when you can reduce a person to, like, a set of numbers, it becomes much easier to eviscerate that person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's like, well, of course, Ronnie, you're like, I had this guy, we were on a Skype call, and I had this guy kind of go, like, I don't, like, Ronnie, hold on, man. Cause I was leading this discussion on a particular point. And he goes, Ronnie, I don't know where you're at. I mean, I guess this is something that really is hard for you. I don't know where you're at in the Enneagram. He said something like that. And I was like, oh, there it is. We're so opposite on the Enne that you don't even want to play ball with any of my thoughts right now. That's how it felt. Wow.
Baby, this is fascinating. Yeah, that's very insightful.
Yeah, it's basically like weaponized pettiness, in the sense of, like, I don't want to deal in the complexity of solving conflict with you. So I'm just going to be like, oh, you're a five. I don't want to deal with you. Oh, you're a four. You cry about everything. Oh, you're a one. That means you're just a pain because you're a perfectionist. Like, whatever it is. And those are it. The thing that I don't understand is, why do people want to reduce, like, all of these things? So whether it's StrengthsFinder or Myers-Briggs or Enneagram, or, you know, pick your favorite evaluation, when you reduce somebody to those labels, they completely don't serve a purpose. When you recognize that those are, like, applicable in contexts, then they're very beneficial. But nobody wants to deal with them in a any sort of a semi complex way.
And you know what's so funny about that, boys? I mean, listen, think about it. Like, in the old days, it would be like, oh, well, dude, you just, like, you're an Arminian, or, like, you're dispensational, or they would go, like, theological with it to sort of write off your position. And now it's much easier to say, hey, we're all somewhere on this Enneagram scale, so now we can just use that. We don't have to go into theology with this. We can just go into personality and temperament.
It's like a grading scale we can all agree on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're right.
It's crazy.
Except for KDY. He doesn't agree.
Dude, I'm totally with KDY right now. I completely switched my position. This is preposterous that we have the Enne.
Dude, you flipped. For the first time in like the recorded history of the Gospel Coalition, an article has actually managed to change someone's mind, instead of just, like, drive people further into their, like, you know, whatever strident position they were in. So
I'm going to go click like on the article right now, baby, right after we're done.
Baby, this is incredible. Drop them a note. Drop those guys a quick note and let them know that it worked. Okay. Let them know that, you know, this date in history, February 7, 2018, date of our recording, you changed your mind based on something that ran on their website. And
based on something that gentlemen like us discussed in a gentlemanly fashion. Without
in a gentlemanly way, out, without
throwing out, like, wait a minute, Ted, where are you at on the Enne?
That's funny. I took the Enne a while ago, and again, I found it very insightful and interesting, but I can't for the life of me remember which one of those things I am. So I couldn't even say, you know, I could make some up, but I, you know, it wouldn't be right.
Let's talk about it next time. We'll all come to the table with our Ennies, and we'll talk about it, and we'll talk about how we feel about it, and how we're not going to listen to each other or really take each other's opinion seriously because of it.
And it's not going to be about each other. It's going to be really about me. It's like when you make a mixtape for somebody, all the songs are about you, really. That's kind of the dynamic of the Enne. So we'll just be essentially talking past each other, but it'll be good.
It's a spiritual mixtape.
It's a spiritual mixtape, right? All the songs are about my favorite person, me.
Enneagram mixtapes, man.
Enneagram mix. Oh, now there's a product, baby. There's a product we can sell, I bet.
Maybe we'll have it for T4R. I don't know. I'm just saying.
That's a book idea for somebody, is like, what mixtape would each of the different Enneagram types make? That would sell. That would sell like hotcakes. I don't know how well hotcakes sell, but my understanding is they sell well.
That would sell well.
If you're an IHOP, you sell really well.
Yeah, we could sell the heck out of those things. That would be amazing. Yeah, so you know what? Maybe maybe we'll do this for the next step. So put a pin in that idea, boys. Maybe we'll make a mixtape. Let's do this. Let's find out what Enneagram profile a couple of key like gospel coalition-y people have. Like if we could find Driskies or like Don Carson's or whatever. And then we'll, as a group, we'll make a mixtape for Don Carson.
What are the odds that Don Carson has done the Enneagram voluntarily?
Yeah, dude, if you found out, dude, I want to give an award to the first person that can tell us D.A. Carson's Enny.
And not by speculation, but by you know that he took it.
Yeah. Right.
I'm holding it right in my hand.
Yes.
Yeah. Dak would not sit happily for the Enny. I can tell you that right now. I tried to engage him one time in a discussion on his feelings, and it went nowhere. So that's dangerous ground, people. Boys, speaking of feelings, this is a fascinating one, Pipe. And this is why it's fun to interact with the fans once in a while on Twitter. So we had a listener send in a story of a woman who brought a man to her women's Bible study and called it a date.
I believe the man and the woman were married. So it was bringing a husband to a women's Bible study. And the description was, this is a hot date. I know no more details than this other than the listener said, I believe this is something you gentlemen would enjoy sussing out.
Okay. So the two people in question were married. Ostensibly they got a sitter or whatever for the kids and childcare
at women's Bible study. Don't forget.
Childcare at women's Bible study. And the lady's like, you know what, sweetie, I'm taking you out. I'm going to take you out on the town. And he's like, where are we going? And she goes, you know what? It's a surprise. You'll find out when you get there. And he's super excited. He's pumped. He thinks he's going to like get a steak or maybe see the new Bourne movie or whatever. And they roll up to the church and they go inside. There's all the screaming bananas, little kids running around. And then they settle into whatever like sad Sunday school room they use for women's Bible study. And she's calling this a hot date. Now, Piper, did she give any other like clarification on her end as to why she thought this would be either hot or a date?
I think that was the question the listener was posing is what in God's name was she thinking?
Yes.
Which is a very fair question given the scenario laid out.
I don't know. That's the thing. I'm perplexed by this one because I have no idea, Piper, what she was thinking or how that could be a date unless it depends on the guy. Like so let's do this. Let's suss out what kind of guy would enjoy that as a date.
Not one I want to be friends with.
Not anyone on this program, probably.
Not one I've ever known. Next question.
Exactly. So I can't imagine like she brings the guy in the room. Maybe they're holding hands. He probably knows these ladies like from church or whatever. So I wonder if right away sort of the alpha was like, so what's your husband doing here? Or if it was just kind of like awkward chit chat all around. I can't even speculate. Boys, what thoughts do you have on this?
I'm thinking of scenarios that could explain this if you decide to set reality, you know, at further than arm's reach. First of all, they are newlyweds. Which means they are investing heavily in their marriage, but you know maybe don't have a keen sense on how this could work. So there's a possibility. I mean, so I kind of envision a really young couple, and he wanting to go along with this and be like, yes, let's you know I'm going to participate. You love this thing. I too am going to love this thing. Not realizing that you can have separate things sometimes. Yeah. So there's one scenario, possibly maybe that in prior weeks in that Bible study, they had been talking about investing in your significant other and how to love them and care for them. And like, you should date your spouse. And so the woman was like, well, free childcare, free coffee and pastries. This is a way to date my spouse. And so kind of brings him into that. Trying to follow the letter of the law without really maybe understanding the spirit of what was being taught. I don't know. I guess that's literally all I can come up with on why this would work other than someone is just insane.
How comfortable do you think that guy would be talking? So they're like, they're diving into the Jen Wilkin book, man. They're getting after it. You know, he has ruined essentially the rest of the vibe in the room. So no one's going to feel comfortable like really sharing with him in there, but how comfortable do you think he feels, Big R?
Well, dude, not notverycomfortable.com. I mean, like here's the problem with everything we're saying. Like last time I checked, like dudes aren't invited into those kind of scenarios. Right. Like there's kind of a thing with women's Bible studies and, you know, on the other end, men's Bible studies where like the opposite sex doesn't really like, you know, cross the threshold into those spaces.
Dude, especially in Reformedom. I feel like in Reformed, yeah. Reformed churches are like de facto segregated by gender anyway. And
so to say that it would be awkward, I mean, I would say it's beyond awkward because you got all these women looking at this. Well, first they're looking at this dude like, why are you here? Did you get the date mixed up? You know, the men's thing is tomorrow night or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it has to turn to looking at the wife going like, what kind of punishment?
Why did you bring me here?
What kind of punishment are you trying to inflict on your newlywed husband right now that you forced him to come to this thing that, by the way, he's not allowed to be here?
Like, dude,
like he should be escorted out right now. Like we're going to go call like the senior pastor's wife right now and have her escort him out.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. She's going to walk him out past the, you know, past the kids area, past the Jen Wilkin books.
And she'll walk in with like holding a Jen Wilkin book with like a walkie talkie and like some kind of device over her. You know what I mean? And
yeah, absolutely.
Literally escort him out of the premises. Right?
I think so. I think that's appropriate.
I'm sitting here trying to envision what it would look like for him to engage that conversation. You know, so they're all sitting around the round tables in the dingy fellowship hall and, or the fireside room or whatever it is their church has. And, you know, they get like somebody muddles through the teaching part, kind of constantly giving him side eye. And then they get to the discussion part, you know, where they're going to, you know, this is the application. This is where we take what was taught and we, you know, we figure out how does it apply to our lives. Does the guy just like open up, you know, does he take men's Bible study into women's Bible study? So the first words out of his mouth are like, guys, I really struggled with porn this week, because that's every men's Bible study ever. And then I feel like that scenario is one that, I mean, I would love to be a fly on a wall for that. That sounds entertaining.
That's when it gets interesting. That's what I was going to say, because what's going to happen is you're going to get some of the younger wives in there saying, hey, I thought I got to leave the mansplaining at home tonight, right? Yes. So you get some dude that wants to start like talking about his feelings.
Well, actually.
Right, exactly. I mean, can you imagine the mood around the room? I think it would be priceless.
Yeah, it really depends what kind of church this is as to how the guy will roll, because if it's a hardcore Reformed church, it's de facto segregated by gender. But also if it's a hardcore Reformed church, like if there's a man in the room, like everybody automatically defers to the man. So yeah,
even if
he could end up running the thing,
even if he's a complete and utter moron, he still gets deferred.
Okay. Like what do you think would happen if it was a women's Bible study led by Rachel, the Held Evans?
I was just going to say that if it was like a liberal church,
what happened when the man walked into something like that? Like what kind of treatment would he receive? Even though, let's just assume he's like trying to like, you know, please his wife.
He could get some, you know what? We don't see gender, so we're happy to have you. I hope you feel comfortable. It's not an issue for me that you're here. So some of that kind of language. Pipe, what do you
know? I'm going to talk for about 20 minutes about how it's not an issue for me.
Exactly.
I mean, if the leaders wanted to subversively get him to leave, they would just go around and tell all the women to begin talking about all matters of female hygiene and feminine issues. And that guy would bolt so fast. He'd be like, you know what, honey, I'm not feeling so great. I'm going to go wait in the car and listen to sports talk radio or whatever, you know, because I can't hang with this. So if they were smart leaders, or if Rachel the Held Evans was in charge, my guess is that she'd be like, all right, this week we're studying, I don't know, something about women's hygiene that makes every man uncomfortable. He'd be like, we're studying women's periods. And all of a sudden the guy's just gone. Like he's gone so fast. He's like, you know, I'm going to go volunteer in the kids ministry. I'm going to go change some diapers because I can't take this anymore.
Can you imagine the awkward conversation that the leader would have to have with the wife afterwards, saying, you know, this is really meant for like just for women, and we're going to have to ask you to not, you know, can you imagine how awkward
could you
that
not
would be?
Do that anymore?
Oh, so bad.
Oh, that would be amazing.
That's amazing. I'd love to ask the listener for more clarity. So if she could write back and, you know, just give us a few more details on how that went. I would be fascinated, just as a student of humankind, Pipe. And as such, on that level, we just had a Super Bowl, boys. It was a great game. New England narrowly lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. And more than a game, though, the Super Bowl is a cultural event. We won't focus on the sports, not on this program. Boys, I had a party, so I wasn't able to be as like dialed into the commercials and stuff as I usually am. But I saw a couple that I was intrigued by, and I want to get your take on these. First of all, Big R, I know you're a Stranger Things guy, as am I. I saw that Hopper made an appearance in an ad, and I really, at that moment, I wished there were no people in my house so that I could just focus on Hop, because I think he's the most fascinating person. And I would watch a show about him just like doing police paperwork if they offered that. But what was the Hopper commercial, and how good was it?
Yeah, the Hop was doing, I think he was doing all the Tide commercials.
Okay.
And so Tide did this kooky thing where they mimicked all of these old school other Super Bowl or just regular commercials that we've seen in the past. And then Hop would sort of, you know, kind of come into it because you're thinking it's one thing. And then Hop would sort of pop into the screen making an appearance, and he would turn it into like a Tide commercial.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. So that's really kind of what he did throughout the night. Yeah. So Tide just wanted to own the Super Bowl, right? They just want us to buy detergent. They just want us to know how
they
we're
just wanted
watching
teens to eat some Tide Pods.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely crazy. So yeah, it was entertaining. It was good. I mean, of course, you know, I know people probably don't think I watched the Super Bowl, to which I say, you know what? I mean, I got to eat, you know, the guy got to eat here. So I find a house where they're showing the game, where there's lots of delicious food. And, you know, I actually watched the entire game this time, Big T. I think you'd be proud
really,
of me for
baby.
That.
I'm very proud.
The entire game. I've
maybe
never
that
done
reminds
that.
Me, The Ringer just did like a 8,000 word tribute to Any Given Sunday. I got to send you this article, so don't let me forget. But baby, what were your impressions? Not to turn this into Happy Rant Sports, but did you have any impressions, or did you come away with any like noteworthy moments about the game itself, like the actual football action?
Yeah, I dug it, man. Okay. So
what'd you dig about it, man? Lay that on me.
Well, I'll tell you what I dig about it, man. I like underdogs. So okay. So going into it, I know Philly was an underdog, and I loved when I learned the story of the quarterback for Philly. What was his name?
Nick Foles.
Nick Foles. I loved how this guy was essentially like me. Like he was just some slob that they had to pull up because the real guy got hurt. And yeah. And he literally delivered the goods, but he did it against all the odds. And I'm telling you, see, I'm more into the backstory. The backstory of the players is what gets me interested in the actual game more than watching these dudes in tights run around playing with balls, right? So yeah. That's kind of the thing for me. So knowing that that was his story, it made the game like super compelling to me. And I love that he defeated like the dude married to the supermodel worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I love that.
Fascinating, baby. So you got swept up in this whole Nick Foles narrative. This is really interesting to me. I didn't think stuff like that worked on you, but I'm glad to hear that it does.
Well, that makes sense.
I love the guy.
That makes sense because
that nobody cares about. I love it, man. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
that makes sense because that sounds like the plot of a sports movie, like the backup quarterback coming in against, you know, the historically good team and sort of the evil yeah. genius coach and the pretty boy opponent quarterback with the supermodel significant other like that. That is the plot of a sports movie. And, you know, Nick Foles he's that guy. So I can see why Ronnie fell in love with that storyline.
Fascinating.
It was great. I thought it was epic.
How did you consume the Super Bowl? Like what kind of a context were you in?
I was at a friend's house with, like, you know, it's three or four different families there, which means that it was regular interruptions by like barrages of children charging through and asking for brownies and queso yeah. and whatever else. So I missed a good chunk of the commercials as well. Yeah. I did manage to watch the majority of the game because I had to pick and choose. And I was like, well, if I'm going to pick, I'm going to try to watch the football part.
Yep.
And I watched the halftime show. I was thoroughly entertained. I really expected to be bored out of my mind because the Patriots are, you know, they're there every year, it feels like. And yeah. I don't like the Eagles because they beat the Vikings. So, but it ended up being a pretty awesome football game.
Yeah, it really was. Pipe, any impressions from you on the halftime show?
White people love Justin Timberlake. And it felt... I mean, first of all, I think people who have really strong opinions about halftime shows should probably go see a doctor about that, because it's a halftime show.
Right.
But it was pretty boring. It was just sort of like, yeah. I mean, it was just sort of like,
it was very standard halftime show.
It felt very high school musically, you know, sort of like fun, pop, upbeat, dance around, safe, you know, other than him like making out with all those people on the way to the stage. But other than that, I was just sort of like, yeah, this feels like High School Musical meets talent show, you know. And from a musical standpoint, I was kind of bothered, because I'm like, he's actually a good musician, but you couldn't tell it from the halftime show.
Right, right. Big R, I have a philosophical question for you, and then we're going to have to wrap the program. But given this discussion of halftime shows, and I don't know how much you ever dreamed of Joy E playing a halftime show at the Super Bowl. I don't know if that ever like drifted through your transom as a dream. I dreamed about it for you. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I never dreamt about it. That was too far. It's too far reaching, but I appreciate you dreaming about it. That helps me right now, just knowing you dreamt about it.
No, I mean, you're a realist. You're a businessman. So my question for you is this. I have played or coached on kind of every low level of football there is, right? I've seen the dark underbelly of the sport in various low levels. What's the highest level of football, college or professional, that you could see Joy E playing the halftime show for?
Oh man, that's rough, dude.
Are we talking like a low tier, like, you know, late December college bowl game? Are we talking?
I think that's generous.
Okay. Are we talking arena football? So we're talking indoors. I see Joy E as kind of more of an indoorsman's band. So
yeah, for sure.
Maybe we're talking arena ball, man.
Yeah, I think we would have been lucky to get an arena gig, right? Okay. And it would have been like an arena gig, because we were on tour with the band that actually got the arena gig, and we were just happened to be opening for them. And part of the package was you have to let this band open for us before like we do the main thing.
Okay, interesting, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Pipe, what do you think about this? What highest level of halftime show for Joy?
Like division two or three college basketball.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I didn't consider basketball, but that actually makes a lot more sense.
I know we were talking about football, but like football has a halftime culture.
Yes.
Whereas basketball has halftime like opportunities, you know?
I agree,
so like, and at the lower levels, like half the time, nothing happens during halftime. And so it's like kids out there shooting on the court or whatever, but sometimes they're like, hey, there's a band on campus at the school, or a local band, or, you know, a beatboxer or whatever. Not to say that Joy E is any of those things, but it's sort of like, it's the offbeat opportunity. And so I feel like that could be where it worked.
Well, having said that, Pipe, I mean, we did play quite a few. In fact, I couldn't probably count them, the number of like basketball gyms we played over the year. So there's
right. I mean,
there's something. There's
I'm
something
picturing
to
all of the Wheaton College basketball games that I attended in my 4 years there, which was almost every home game, because I was friends with a number of the basketball players and I really enjoyed going. And it feels like the kind of thing that could work, like where you play there, but then they're also like, and in the student center afterwards, you'll get like the more full show. So like you're going to play
lots
here and then go set up at this. You're going to go set up at the, you know, the student union or the student center for a post game late night concert kind of thing.
I'll tell you this, boys, and you'll probably like this bit of news, and we don't have to suss it out. But, you know, one of the highlights or lowlights, depending on how you want to view it, for Joy E was some promoter got this grand idea to put us and Petra together in a high school gym.
Baby.
And, so we got to open for Petra. I mean, you really couldn't find, you know, opposite ends of the poles, you know, and this is Petra. This is like 20 years ago. So it's way when their career is like, I don't even know, you know, they're on their 19th singer. The original band is probably not even alive anymore, but they're still somehow out there touring. And so we got together for one unforgettable evening, Joy E and Petra. And it was an experience. I'll just say that.
Baby, that sounds amazing. Boys, my wife just hand delivered me a hot cup of Lagares Roasters Happy Rant signature blend, which I'm drinking out of.
Double K. Say hi to Double K.
Yeah. Baby, say hi to Big R. It's been a few years.
Hey, Big R.
There she is. There's Double. Yeah, and I'm drinking this bad boy out of a Happy Rant coffee mug. Very handsome black mug with the white Happy Rant logo on it. So I'm loving life right now.
Well,
boys.
Speaking of that mug, I always forget to mention this because we don't have a specific promotion with them, but all of our swag is through Missionalware. And I think if you use the code Happy Rant Pod or Happy Rant at checkout, I'm not sure which. I think it's just Happy Rant. You get it like a 10% discount. So if you're interested in mugs or Yeti mugs or moleskins or T-shirts or whatever, and you go to missionalware.com and use the code HAPPYRANT, I'm pretty sure you get a discount because I think that's just a standing offer they have. And I'm a terrible businessman who forgets to mention that.
No, Pipe, that's good business right there. And that's what we do on this show. We do good business. Boys, we have wandered to and fro throughout these topics. I'm getting ahead of myself. Even I'm excited about thinking about Big R playing a Division II college halftime. You know what, Pipe? What are the odds that we could get Big R out to Union University to do a halftime show? That would just bring a lot of things together. You could make the trip down from Nashville.
I would absolutely make that trip. I would make that trip so fast. The question is, does Big R want to do a halftime show at a collegiate sporting event? He seemed lukewarm on the idea a few moments ago.
Big R, let me tell you what Union had for a halftime show at the last game I went to. So this is Division II basketball. Halftime happens, and there's a group of high school cheerleaders. And apparently this was like the state high school cheerleading, champions like many, many years in a row. And they had these big, elaborate, like interlocking mats. And for like the first 8 or 9 minutes of the 15-minute halftime, it was just an exercise in watching these kids like put these mats together, which was really like, for me, it was good television. Like it was really high drama. You know, are all these, you know, adolescent kids going to be able to like fit this thing together? And then like the last 7 minutes, it was these huge, like hormonal guys just winging these girls like literally up into the rafters and then catching them before they hit the ground. It was pretty fascinating. So I have to tell you, that's what you're up against. You know, that's what the people have come to expect.
That is some steep competition, Ronald.
It is.
Boys, I am pouring all of my effort now into these things called the Happy Rant Live events. So that is where all the effort goes, boys. Because that's where I'm at now.
Because you, we're all in on this, you can't compete with high school cheerleaders.
Well, that's all in on this. So that was but, always true.
But who can?
Absolutely, who can? Boys, we are remiss again in that we meant fully intended to talk about a ranking of the 125 most influential gospel-centered movement people that ran on Gospel Coalition. So at Jared C. Wilson, you're going to have to wait another week for us to suss that out. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
This is Perseus Poku, host of the Sound Reasoning Ministry podcast. Learn how to share and defend your faith by listening to us weekly. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.